Hey everyone, it's Matt. As we get ready for our next episode, please join me in thanking the team at Villanova University. Their support and active engagement with our work at Select Greater Philadelphia helps make our Growing Greater podcast possible. The only Augustinian Catholic university in the nation, Villanova values a personalized experience where teachers and students are partners in learning. Learn more about Villanova University at villanova.edu.
This is Growing Greater. Growing Greater. Bringing you the stories of economic growth, job creation, and business success from across the 11-county community of northern Delaware, southern New Jersey, and southeastern Pennsylvania. Now, here's Matt Gabry.
We are recharged for another great program, and for this week's show, which we are producing and presenting in partnership with the Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia's Energy Action Team, also known as GPEAT, we continue our deep dive into the energy sector. So the way in which energy can exist, it's really diverse, from potential, kinetic, thermal, electrical, chemical, nuclear, you name it. And the way in which we're able to consume energy, well, that's really diverse as well. And that's something our first guest knows firsthand from his really diverse career. Will Agate, Vice President, Microgrid Services at Ameresco, a leading independent provider of energy efficiency and renewable energy solutions for facilities of all shapes and sizes. These solutions help companies reduce overall energy costs by providing new technologies that make renewable energy more attainable, like the microgrid at a dynamic and novel business campus located in Philadelphia that's known as the Navy Yard.
One of the first things that was created was this master plan in which there were six different districts within the Navy Yard identified so that they would go forward with different objectives in each of the districts.
As Will notes, while navigating us through the different hubs of the Navy Yard, from the industrial buildings and the community gathering places to historical landmarks that are being reimagined to the really sleek, modern corporate structures, it becomes really clear there's a lot of innovation happening at the Navy Yard. And helping to fuel that innovation is Ameresco's microgrid. Here, Will shares insights into just what Ameresco does.
Ameresco itself is a really incredibly cool company, founded by a few guys that were already really on the cutting edge of where the energy market was starting to go. I would say that really it was the late 90s and into 2000s when all over our country we were starting to pay attention to how do we, in a meaningful way, get serious about creating energy efficiency. So, you know, if you look at our even longer evolution as a country, you know, up until that point in time, it was all about where does the energy come from? Mm-hmm. How cheaply can we use one form of energy to create another form of energy, in most instances, electricity?
Yep.
And that because of just technology, back then, everything had to be massive. Everything had to be big. Yep. So when we thought about the least expensive way to produce electricity, it was always very large production facilities. And therefore, you needed a very large distribution system that we call transmission in order to get this electricity to places that needed it, like Philadelphia,
right,
that in many instances would be 100, 200, 300 miles away from the source.
Right.
So that was what we used to pay almost all of our attention to. Well, then we started to realize that the saying that still goes today is that the cheapest form of energy and the most clean form of energy is, in fact, the energy that you can figure out how not to use.
Right, right.
And that's what we also call energy efficiency.
Interesting.
So there were companies that were starting to pop up at about the time that Ameresco was formed. And one of the models is called an ESCO model,
okay,
an energy service company model. And it basically revolves around the idea that in many instances, you can create so much energy efficiency in carrying out a project that the cost that you are avoiding or the utility cost that you are reducing is sufficient to pay for the capital improvements required both to make that energy efficiency, and what's very exciting, also additional capital that can be spent on things like schools or public buildings and what have you. So that's where the ESCO model came from, and that's where the name Ameresco came from also.
So the Ameresco part, or the AMER part, is American.
It's America.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thanks for sharing that. That's a really interesting perspective, because I will say the name Ameresco is very specific, so I figured there had to be a story behind it.
That's absolutely. Yeah. And it's an important story, because that is really at the root of where this energy environment has really started to shift.
Right. So, Will, if you could, share with those who may not be as familiar the story of the Philadelphia Navy Yard and how it's evolved, because you referenced it as a community, which is exactly what it is. But the average listener may not necessarily hear Navy Yard and say, oh, that's a community.
Right. Well, there are so many places I could go with that question. And, you know, just to be very clear about it, the Philadelphia Navy Yard, back to one of our first conversations in this discussion, we have so many attributes that we don't always go out there and advertise. And certainly the Philadelphia Navy Yard project is something that those of us who have become associated with the project, we realize how great it is. And so one of the things that was really important to me in my tenure there was to try to take that and turn it into much more of a story, and turn it into a story that people would really be able to relate to on a much more sort of personal basis. And then lastly, take that story away from Philadelphia.
Right.
So that we could literally use a place like the Philadelphia Navy Yard to attract people that were not necessarily engaged in what we were doing here.
Yep.
So the Navy Yard, I call it a community because it really is a unique place that understands a lot of different things. I think at the root of it, understands the change that we are going through in our environment, and what in particular our younger generation of people want when they think about going to work and when they think about who they want to work for. And there could be no better example than to pick Urban Outfitters as a great example of a company at the Navy Yard that really gets it. So Urban Outfitters starts with not allowing their employees to bring dogs to work, but encouraging their employees to bring dogs to work. So you've got a place where people have a lot more latitude and they feel good about where they are. And then you add the assets that PIDC has just done a terrific job of creating, now under the leadership of Prima Gupta, things like the Navy Yard transit system, so that we are getting people from Center City into the Navy Yard. And one of those add-ons was that we looked at how we were dealing with the question of energy and figuring out how can we deploy more of these sustainable and green technologies. And that's what led to a very progressive energy plan that we created for the Navy Yard community.
That makes perfect sense. And I want to put a fine point on that, Will, and you tell me if I'm off base here at all. But back in the late 90s, the federal government actually owned and operated this parcel of land at the end of South Broad Street in Philadelphia called the Navy Yard. And they decided to divest several different Navy Yards across the country. And they essentially gave that land back to, or gave it to, the city of Philadelphia. And under the leadership of PIDC, PIDC has been developing and managing that property from just a parcel of land to a real asset. So to your point, the reason we refer to it as a community is because there are now almost 14,000 people, a little over 160 companies, including Urban Outfitters, as you referenced, who call the Navy Yard home. And it's also home to, and this is where I really want to dive in with you even more, the Navy Yard is home to something called a microgrid. And I suspect that you had a hand in, and Ameresco may have also been part of the equation, to create this thing that we call a microgrid. So, first of all, am I on track with that scenario?
You're not only on track, Matt, as you always are, you're spot on.
Thank you. Talk about the microgrid.
Sure.
And that whole concept of how do we provide this energy kind of structure, if you will, to this community.
Sure. So step back, if you will, and try to remember the beginning part of my describing sort of how this energy environment is changing so dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And recall that I was talking about the fact that really for 150 years, in particular when we think about electricity, and I understand that you had a great interview previously with Andy Ott from PJM, who is in charge of a lot of the management involved in sort of making sure that our transmission system is progressive and safe and doing what it should be doing. Well, so what we now are realizing is that for a whole variety of reasons, some to do with the technologies that are now available, but maybe even more importantly, to do with the fact that we live in an environment where the customer, the consumer, chooses what they want. And what the microgrid does in a very interesting way is it's not just the technology. It's more importantly, it's the business application. Is that it allows you to deploy local forms of generation. So instead of those huge coal plants, for example, that might be 300 miles away, maybe there's a way to economically deploy a clean natural gas burning generator on site. And if you start there and you create a distribution system that is quote unquote smart, has smart meters, has its own communication system, has some kind of a computer network operations center that is basically managing all of this, you can actually isolate your community from the larger grid. That's technically when you are getting into the arena of microgrids.
Gotcha.
So the microgrid is really one of the new business models, technology models that we are starting to see being deployed in the United States and actually all around the world. So hearken back to the story of the Navy Yard. That is where we put this progressive energy plan together, where we could actually justify economically going forward with this microgrid model. And that is where we now take the microgrid model and we talk about the Navy Yard externally to Philadelphia and bring all that economic attention to Philadelphia. So all of these pieces really belong together.
Gotcha. So just to put a fine point on that as well, Will, is the Navy Yard today operating off of a microgrid, or it's an option that kicks in as needed?
First of all, I will say this about the subject of microgrids, and this is why I was hired by Ameresco, is to really be a thought leader and a doer behind all of the different ways that you can apply microgrid-related solutions. So in the case of the Navy Yard, it is not operating separately from the grid. But it has, I like to refer to it as a foundational microgrid. And the other analogy I like to always use is it's very much like thinking of your smartphone, in that it's a platform that is going to allow for these new technologies that are being developed that have a lot to do with renewable power and a lot to do with strategies that we can deploy in order to address, you know, dangerous situations that develop from climate change. So it's a place where you are managing your energy in a different way, and ultimately you might take sections of the Navy Yard and separate them from the big grid.
Gotcha.
But that has not been done yet.
Gotcha. It's a work in progress, and it's a vision.
This is a work in progress, no matter where you're talking about microgrids.
Now, this is Ameresco's contribution to the Navy Yard. This is what's called a natural gas generator. And this is basically all that we're doing here is we're using natural gas to create electricity. And the value proposition is that the cost of electricity when you are using the most amount of electricity is much more expensive than when you're using your base load amount of electricity. And it's so much more expensive that you can actually pay to turn on a natural gas generator and that electricity by capping the electricity that you're using for the whole Navy Yard reduces the operating costs. So it's one of the value propositions that makes a microgrid a possibility.
And the possibilities for the businesses in the Navy Yard, they're endless, thanks in part to Amoresco's hard work. While on a tour of the business campus, Will guided us to where the power is actually stored in these large white cylinders. Though very unassuming, these containers literally power the potential growth of the Navy Yard and for businesses across the region. Folks, we're talking with Will Agate. He is part of Amoresco and specifically is part of the microgrid services team at Amoresco, which is an energy company that really specializes in what we refer to as green, clean, and sustainable focus. So I know you referenced this term a couple times, resiliency. Talk a little bit more about how do we put either a price tag on resiliency or how do we factor that into, if you're talking with a customer, frankly, or a prospect, of the importance of resiliency being built into the potential of having a microgrid on site, or if it is already on site, how and when to kind of exercise its use and integrate it into the operations.
Right. Well, to be honest, the term resiliency is, I believe, I actually wrote a piece about this earlier this year and talking about 2019 predictions. The term resiliency is really the elephant in the room.
Hmm.
And it's a big challenge, not because it can't be quantified, but because each of those specific sectors that I was talking about of application have a different way of putting a value on it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just quickly start with the simplest of examples and a sector that I didn't even mention earlier, and that is just a straight up manufacturing or industrial complex. You know, there's a very specific economic loss that occurs if their power goes down.
Right.
It just gets measured mathematically against how much production are they not going to be able to produce for that period of time. So there's your answer to what the resiliency is worth.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's look at the other end of the spectrum. How does the mayor of Philadelphia or council or first selectman of a town or mm-hmm. a county commissioner, how do you put a price on the resiliency for your population if they are down for 4 or 5 days?
Right.
You know, how do you put a price on the number of deaths that might occur from that kind of an event?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you put a price on all of the lost goods and merchandise? And those are the things that are much more difficult to really quantify. And once we come up with a standardized way to do so, which is what we are trying to help to lead with,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to become a much easier value to add to the equation. And when that happens, that's when we're really going to start to see the microgrid model taking off.
How is the microgrid actually fueled, if you will? It's not just one source, right?
Right.
It can come from yep. solar, or it can come from wind, or it can come from, I guess, traditional electricity and liquid natural gas and other kinds of sources. Is that fair?
Oh, it's a very big aspect of what's so exciting about this
mm-hmm.
is that when you talk about a microgrid, so if you remember my analogy to a smartphone,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just like a smartphone. When you buy a smartphone, you aren't limited in terms of what the applications are that you can put on that phone. You are, in fact, the opposite. You're given a platform that you have, I mean, limitless opportunities for whatever is important to you. Now bring this back to how we common people want to make our energy decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And we should think about a resident all the way up to a Fortune 100 company decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
We want a certain thing. So it just depends on what it is we want. And hopefully our society is pushing us all in the direction of clean energy.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, that is where your solution is likely to start. So in the case of a microgrid, each customer gets to decide what is important to them. And it's a little bit like picking a stock portfolio,
mm-hmm.
you know? You've got to pick a certain direction, and that might be the resiliency, or it might be in a different situation that you just want to have 100% renewable power.
Right.
You have to start with what your strategic goal is, and then we have the microgrid to be the platform from which you can deploy it. So it's all of the above. You get to decide what's important to you. And then the second thing to say here is this part of our energy future is evolving so rapidly that there are technologies that are going to give us ways to, for example, store energy and other ways to produce energy that we haven't figured out yet. This platform gives us the ability to basically have a 20-year plan, 30-year plan, 50-year plan, where those different forms of energy, as they come into being, can be deployed.
Pretty exciting stuff. It is really exciting stuff. And I want to shift it and come back to something that you have a passion for. And I love the fact that community building is really part of who you are.
Yep.
You have the privilege of being part of, and we have the good fortune of having you very engaged with our Greater Philadelphia Energy Action Team as part of our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia, Select Greater Philadelphia, part of our Chamber family. If you could talk a little bit about how that Greater Philadelphia Energy Action Team is really coming together to address opportunities and challenges as it relates to energy by promoting not any one particular path, but providing insight into options and solutions for a variety of audiences.
So I'm going to just start by making a pretty bold statement to answer that question. I think what's exciting for me in getting involved with this group is that it's so much about attitude. And what I mean by that is that, again, as I said earlier in this discussion, it used to be that all we thought about was the production of the energy. And where we are coming to in as a society is that we're realizing that there are many other value propositions that are important to us, the consumer. Mm-hmm. And what's so really interesting, and I think it's going to be a great continuing discussion, is that this group, GPEED, is of that attitude.
Right.
We get that we have to get past just talking about petroleum refinery or a pipeline or those sorts of things. This is very much about how do we provide solutions for our community. And why is that so important? Well, it's very simple. There are so many different ways that communities around the country and the world are competing for business. And the faster that we as a community, as the Philadelphia 11 county community, can really embrace this way of thinking, the faster, I can guarantee everyone that's listening, that is what's going to attract companies to Philadelphia.
Right.
That and other things.
To learn more about Will, including how he got his start in the energy sector, head online for our full interview. SelectGreaterPHL.com/podcast. Next up, did you know that Pennsylvania is the second largest producer of natural gas in the country? We'll check in with a company that's tapping into that resource. First, let's learn more about Kima Laboratories. The team at Kima has 90 years of experience in high power and high voltage testing and certification. The professionals at Kima are the strategic partners for organizations around the world, and they provide a full portfolio of advanced testing to mitigate risks for mission-critical electrical transmission and distribution equipment. The services provided by Kima allow their clients to focus on their core business and on achieving their sustainability and security goals. Kima Laboratories, located in Chalfont, Pennsylvania, provides fully independent testing and certification services to utilities, merchant power companies, petrochemical clients, and others that supply the industrial, utility, and power markets. Learn more at dnvgl.com/Kima Laboratories. Let me give you that one more time. dnvgl.com/Kima Laboratories. That's K-E-M-A Laboratories. Let's get back to our conversation on fueling the future. The processing and distribution of energy resources, it can be costly. So being in close proximity to those energy resources and all the related infrastructure, it can really set an organization apart from their competition. It's all about making energy assets affordable, accessible, safe, and reliable.
The more people learn about what we have to offer here and how it's not easy to replicate anywhere else.
As Jacqueline Mayen notes, having access to natural gas is vital for any community, and Greater Philadelphia is uniquely positioned in that regard. that access, it helps to fuel the successful growth of communities and businesses across the region. Now, Jackie's the Senior Manager of Commercial Business and Marketing at a company called Eastern Shore Natural Gas. They're a subsidiary of Chesapeake Utilities. Jackie and her colleague, Justin Mulcahy, they shared with us just how their team serves their clients. And here, Jackie explains the history and the operations of the company.
So Chesapeake Utilities Corporation is a 150-year-old company. We are a diversified energy company engaged in natural gas distribution, transmission, propane, combined heat and power, and other solutions as well. And we have about 7 or 8 subsidiaries. So the one that I work for is Eastern Shore Natural Gas.
Okay.
And so we bring in the gas from southeastern Pennsylvania all the way down to all of Delaware and parts of Maryland. And we're going to continue to grow as a company. So we also have companies in Florida and Ohio, Virginia, so we cross about 7 states. So people don't realize how big of a company that we are and how long we've been around. And we've been around 6 decades. And
Wow. So
it shows that, you know, the longevity, the safety record, and just how we've just continued to grow and expand in the region and outside the region.
And not only the length of service that your team has been providing, but the impact, which is something I want to get into a little bit later in our conversation. And Justin, I want to turn to you a little bit as well, because I love Jackie's perspective on the industry. And I totally agree. It made perfect sense to those of us who may have a little bit of a closer kind of connection to the industry. Mm-hmm. How do you describe a utility company like Chesapeake Utility Corporation to the average person on the corner, at the diner, in the neighborhood, you know, grocery store? What does that all mean, the distribution and the manufacturing?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, a lot of times with utility companies, when you have natural gas, it's out of sight, out of mind. The infrastructure's in the ground, so people really don't know, how does this apply to me? How is it important? So really, the way to think about it is, when from a distribution standpoint, that's coming into the homes. That's the natural company bringing in the gas to your homes, to the residents. That's Chesapeake Utilities, where Jackie works for the transmission side. That's the pipeline, you know, providing that service from that standpoint, and the distribution is coming off of the pipeline to supply homes. So again, this is infrastructure that is out of sight, out of mind, but it's very important. There's a lot of benefits to it, and especially this time of year for heating the homes. So we have a lot of different companies, as Jackie mentioned. We're a diversified company. We have natural gas, distribution, transmission, propane. So that's part of our philosophy, our strategic approach, is to make sure that, you know, we're meeting customers where they are, and we're making our infrastructure available to customers so they have access to natural gas, because it's important.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I want to drill down on that one aspect a little bit more, Justin, and ask, you're right, that out of sight, out of mind mentality, in my view, I like to interpret that as we take it for granted. We really do. We don't know the value and the benefit of this asset that we have in this community across kind of the 4-state region, 5-state region, if you think about Ohio and into Virginia as well. So we're getting into a little bit of a bigger space that all kind of has a hub in this core of Pennsylvania, if you will. But where I'm going with this is, if you could talk with us a little bit about the impact on the consumer from heating a home, but also the impact on a business and how it allows business to thrive. And it's really a question for both of you, but Justin, I'll start with you.
You know, when you talk about economic development, business growth in a region, you need to have utilities, you need to have access to energy. And that's why natural gas is so important, whether you're talking about from a transmission standpoint, one of your larger customers, you know, such as a refinery, or from a distribution standpoint at that residential level, when you want to bring in more homes, you know, more smaller businesses, you want to make sure that you have the infrastructure in place to accommodate that type of growth. And naturally, from a business standpoint, if you know that infrastructure is there, it's somewhere you're going to look at potentially bringing your business to. Maybe Jackie might be able to expand on that a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. From a business perspective, as I mentioned earlier, we are able to bring in the gas from Pennsylvania, right? Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I feel that should hit home, and people don't realize how extraordinary it is, Pennsylvania is the second largest producer of natural gas,
right,
behind Texas. Like, think about that,
yeah,
right? So you think of how extraordinary that is and how easy it is to get access to the gas, then I think that makes our region much more attractive, because it's going to be lower cost, affordability, and accessibility to that gas.
Right.
So companies, anytime they're looking to come into our region, that's one of the first things they ask. They know that there's close proximity to that gas, and how can we get to it? And this is going to make economic sense for them to do that.
It's not an accident that Chesapeake Utilities Corporation and the subsidiaries that kind of flow from that corporation has major operations in Delaware and are huddled around the Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey type of community, if you will. And it all comes back to that infrastructure. And I know this is going to be a nuanced question as well, Jackie, but I was hoping you could talk with what makes this region so special, at least compared to other regions that may not have the same kind of access and benefit to that infrastructure.
Well, like I just mentioned, we're sitting on a huge energy deposit here. So that makes us unique from other areas. Another stat is approximately 40 or 50% of the U.S. population is within an 8-hour drive to our area, right? So we're the closest point to get to the European market for importing and exporting.
Mm-hmm.
We have railroads, excellent highways. We have a fair amount of space for expansion. Cost of living is substantially lower in some areas. And yet we have all the urban amenities and advantages for that. And we have a lot of things in our favor, which are hard to replicate.
Right.
So I think that's what makes us unique.
I love that you mentioned some of those infrastructure elements like highways, railroads that allow us to distribute. I don't want to forget about the pipeline infrastructure, because
that's
also something that I know you guys live this every day, but that pipeline infrastructure is something that most of us also take for granted, don't even realize that it's there until somewhere along the line there has to be an expansion, and now there's some construction taking place in residential areas. And frankly, it startles people when they realize that a pipeline has been actually in their backyard for more than 50 years. It's clearly marked, but to your point earlier, Justin, out of sight, out of mind, they don't really think about it until some sort of expansion or construction starts, and now there's confusion, misunderstanding. But the other part of the infrastructure that I don't want us to forget about, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, is technology and how much more efficiently through technology we can not only extract, but distribute and essentially manage our energy assets.
Oh, absolutely. We were just having this conversation earlier about the technology, how even just the feet on the street, the teams that are in the field, how they have advanced tools and technology so they can be able to remotely take a look at the infrastructure so they can see if there's anything going wrong. They don't have to be physically there. If there was an incident, automatically, you know, there's backups to backups to backups,
right?
And so that's part of also our energy security, right? That technology. So we need to make sure that we have that. And in terms of other technologies, we have things like renewables. So natural gas, you know, harmonizes very well with renewables and allows them to be on the grid. And what I mean by that is when the wind isn't blowing or the sun isn't shining, natural gas can come in and help step in and fill that void and fill that gap. And without that, we wouldn't be able to have more reliable, resilient grid because of that. So those are just some of the examples of the technologies, and there's also combined heat and power. So that makes it much more efficient. So without combined heat and power, what that would mean is that the efficiency of the energy usage would be maybe 30 or 40%. But when you have the technology of a combined heat and power unit, that would increase the efficiency to about 70% or 80%.
Wow.
So that's huge.
You
can capture that heat to produce more energy without it being evaporated into the universe.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And folks, that's Jackie Mayen. She's here representing Chesapeake Utility Corporation. And she's here with her colleague, Justin Mulcahy. And Jackie, talk a little bit about economic impact and how the infrastructure we have here is driving economic impact, not just from a consumer level, but actually creating new jobs and a clustering effect because of the infrastructure we have here.
So I can start from a consumer standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that we have natural gas, it's much more cost effective, it's reliable, it's accessible, right? That's the common theme.
Sure.
So in essence, then it lowers the costs all around, right? Lowers the cost for those that are actually in the industry, for the customers that you serve, from a larger scale, from electric power generating to refineries to pharmaceuticals, right? All of them use natural gas. And in turn, then the savings moves on to the consumers. So if we didn't have this large energy deposit here, we would have to import natural gas and then export all of our dollars.
Right.
And so then it would make it much harder. When we had a recent polar vortex this winter, it would have been a much more expensive heating, if you will, or running of operations type of
situation,
winter situation than it would have been if we didn't have this abundance of energy and the reliability of the infrastructure.
Right. And because we have that in such a accessible, affordable, reliable way, it's something that we generally don't really think about until it goes out. And Justin, I was hoping you could expand on this notion of the economic driver, that the energy sector is something that is much more powerful than we may appreciate.
Well, you know, Matt, we talked about it off air about Cecil County, Maryland, being part of the region.
Yep.
And we're doing business in Cecil County, and we know one of the drivers is really where am I going to start my business? You know, Amazon has, I believe, a distribution warehouse in Elkton that we're supplying natural gas to. So for us, from a strategic standpoint, we look at, you know, where do we want to reach out? What areas are beneficial? And then a business, we want to work with them to make sure they bring their business to an area like Elkton. And obviously, when you have access to natural gas, somebody like Amazon says, you know what, that's desirable to me. Right. I want to go there. There's an opportunity. But also, you know, just from a job standpoint, we're a growing company. We opened a new facility in the past year at Energy Lane in Dover. We have a growing workforce, I believe almost 1,300 employees now. So that in and of itself brings contractors onto the system. So you're driving, you know, jobs that way when you're growing as a company. And certainly we want to continue to grow when the opportunities make sense for us to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. Jackie, I want to shift to you because you had referenced this earlier in our conversation, and I'm really glad you did. And I'd love to get your perspective because you're on the front lines with our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Under our CEO Council for Growth, we have something called the Greater Philadelphia Energy Action Team. It's a group of more than 100, I think it's almost up to 200 folks who gather on a regular basis to share ideas, to strategize around how do we address the hurdles and overcome those challenges? How do we work in a much more collaborative way? And I'd love to get your perspective on the work that you and your colleagues are doing through and with our Greater Philadelphia Energy Action Team.
Sure, Matt. Happy to. Through the Greater Philadelphia Energy Action Team, the Chamber, through our Delaware Prosperity Partnership folks, I mean, Kurt Foreman, et cetera, there are a lot of industry individuals, some competitors, some just construction workers, legal. I mean, you have all facets of the industry in the same room.
Yeah, experts and key opinion leaders.
Correct,
sure.
Correct. Which is fascinating because I think everybody checks that competition piece at the door. And we all really come together and really have those hard conversations of like, what are we doing to make sure that people understand that this is a place that they need to come to?
Right.
What are the things that we need to change? How do we educate? We've had to pivot where, you know, we wanted to build a lot more pipeline in the area, but that didn't quite pan out. So like, well, how can we pivot to change that and achieve those goals together in a different way?
Right.
And so through that brainstorming, which is fascinating. If you've never been to a meeting, I highly recommend it.
Yep.
And through that brainstorming process, we're like, oh, how do we attract the right businesses? And really had us have that first step of self-awareness.
Right.
Right. Who are we? Who do we want people to know? What are some of the gaps or some of the things that are not so great? And how could we address that and help to change that so that we can be better suitors, if you will, of folks that are looking at our region? And
yep,
it's not just talking to the folks here in Philadelphia, Delaware, New Jersey, but all over the country and even internationally.
Yeah.
Because there are folks that want to, you know, build operations, they want to do importing, exporting, and so why not look at this area?
That's at the very least, we want them to look at this
Absolutely.
Neighborhood.
Let us know
sure.
we exist.
That's right.
And people don't realize that people, oh, I haven't been to Philly in a long time. I'm like, you need to go. It's
right.
an amazing place.
Totally.
You know, to just walk and shop and eat. And so it's creating that quality of place.
Right.
Where people could come and feel that I can live here and I can also, my child can have a place to go play baseball or hockey
right.
or football
right.
or those things. Those are the small things that matter that are huge to families. And so that's why I think it's amazing.
Absolutely. And it's all fueled by a really great energy infrastructure.
Exactly.
One of the ways I like to describe our Greater Philadelphia Energy Action Team, yes, it's about strategy. It's about partnership. It's about collaboration. But at the end of the day, in my view, it's really all about solutions.
Yes.
How do we work better together? And it's actually one of the things that we at our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia and Select Greater Philadelphia and our CEO Council for Growth, we're all one big family. We're really proud of our ability to convene, to bring people together in a safe place, to have these kinds of hard conversations. Because if there's not that kind of gathering, then it's likely not going to happen unless somebody who's in a more neutral kind of objective position can accomplish by bringing those folks together. So the future of energy in the Greater Philadelphia region, heck, you can even say the future of energy in the U.S. 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Justin, what do you think?
You know, I think it's going to continue to trend the way it's going just in terms of the use of technology. You know, we talked about the compressed natural gas. I think it's going to trend towards a cleaner energy sector. I think you're going to see more advancements come along. I mentioned drones. I mean, things like that to inspect pipelines. I think people are going to be looking at ways to make the industry as safe as possible. I mean, even when you use technology that uses cameras and pipelines and things like that, if you're even exploring that idea, it's safe because a lot of times there's places you can't get to. You know, somebody in the field can't get to it. So I know as a company, we talked about when you convene, you're always looking for best practices because as a whole, we're an industry. We're all in it together. We're exchanging ideas. We're looking for ways to make the industry safer because, as we said earlier, we want to provide safe and reliable natural gas. So I see it going towards an innovative future. It's going to continue to go that way. Like we mentioned, the fleet vehicles. I think you're going to see more compressed natural gas in fleet vehicles. You know, combined heat and power, I think sustainability is the future. And as technology comes out, you're going to see more companies exploring it and saying, hey, does this make sense for us? Because you can't be stagnant. You got to keep up. The industry's evolving and customers are evolving as well.
Absolutely. Jackie, what do you see the industry in the next 5 to 10 years?
I think it's going to continue to boom. It's just a piggyback off of what Justin was saying. The more people learn about what we have to offer here and how it's not easy to replicate anywhere else, I definitely foresee more businesses and more people in general wanting to come to this area because of the fact that we have so much to offer. And so I definitely see that happening. And even now when we get requests for service out of towners, other states, and they want to know how quickly can you get natural gas? Because that's what's going to help me to succeed and grow. And then that's exciting because then we know, okay, now they're seriously considering coming here. That just means more for the economic development piece, more jobs, and all the things that go along with that.
Jackie and Justin share so much more with us, including their views on the future of the energy sector. Check it out at selectgraderphl.com/podcast. And in the spirit of cool energy stories, the most recent episode of NBC10's Growing Greater Philadelphia television program features one of the largest solar facilities in the country, and it's located in Philadelphia. Be sure to tune in nbcphiladelphia.com/news/Growing Greater Philadelphia for that story and so much more. Growing Greater is presented by Select Greater Philadelphia, a council of our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Select is the business attraction organization for Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania, and helps to grow the economic vibrancy of our collective community by attracting new businesses and new jobs to our region. Special thanks to our program producers, Elena Karmazin and Maricela Juarez, along with the great team of marketing and creative services professionals at our chamber. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in anytime and anywhere you get your podcasts or online at selectgraderphl.com/podcast.